Good afternoon, folks, and welcome to Alaska Gold Trails. I'm your host, Jim Madonna. This is your radio show on mining in Alaska, past, present, and future. More specifically, folks, gold mining in Alaska's misty past, controversial present, and mysterious future. I'll be with you here on KFAR 660 on your radio dial each Thursday from 1 to 2 p.m., where we can discuss the entire spectrum of mining in Alaska, from the fascinating and colorful history of the major and minor gold rushes to the most recent gold prospecting and mining techniques. Also, we will have special guests to discuss different mining-related topics. Most of all, my friends, give us a call if you have a question or care to make a comment on mining in Alaska. Or maybe you just want to chat for a few minutes or want to share one of your favorite frontier experiences. The number here is 479-TALK. That's 479-8255. Let's talk gold mining through the years along Alaska Gold Trails. I want to say a quick hello to all my friends out there in Chicken, Alaska, especially Robin. I want to thank you, Robin, for your letter that you sent me a couple of months ago. I also want to say hello to the Taylors out there in the 40 Mile, some of my friends up at Central, and, of course, a lot of my friends out there on the Elliott Highway in the area of Live and Good. So hello, folks, and welcome to Alaska Gold Trails. Thank you for listening. Appreciate hearing from you from time to time when you stop in and let me know that you've heard us on KFAR Radio and Alaska Gold Trail Show. Well, the first thing we better do this afternoon is, of course, have our contest. And I know that you're all waiting eagerly for the big question. What shall we give away today? Let's see. How about a 1 troy ounce silver ingot from Oxford Assaying and Refining, the precious metals people, located at 208 Wendell Street. Let's see, a good question would be, who is located at 456-6156? I want to know who they are, where they are, and what they do. So, be ready to give me all that information. If you'd like to win a 1 troy ounce silver ingot from Oxford Assaying and Refining, you'd like to give me a call here and tell me who is located at 456-6156, and our number here is 479-TALK. That's 479-8255. And while we're waiting for you to call us here, we'll just take a listen to this.
Alaska Sportsman's Mall is going to stay open just as long as they can before closing for remodeling, so you can still get fantastic deals throughout the store, like a 17-foot-long Coleman canoe for $299 or a two-man boat kit for just $23.99. Selected wool socks, $1.99 plus a limited stock of display and damaged tents, some up to 75% off. Stop in now for the best selection since quantities are limited. Alaska Sportsman's Mall on Cushman Street.
Hi, you're on the air. Hello? Hello? Can I hear you? Or can you hear me? I've lost them. Well, we lost our caller. Once again, we'd like to know who is located at the phone number 456-6156. And we'd like to know who they are, where they are, and what they do. And our phone number here is 479-TALK. That's 479-8255. So if you've got the answer to that particular question, we'd like to hear from you. And while we're talking about that, well, let's talk a little bit about the people who have given away the silver ingot here, and that, of course, is Oxford Assaying and Refining. They're located at 208 Wendell Street, and everybody knows that they go by the byline of the precious metals people. And in addition to buying gold from the miners, Oxford Assaying and Refining also provides investment ingots and bars, and in the form of 1 ounce, 5 ounce, 10 ounce, and 50 ounce and 100 ounce bars of silver and gold. And you might want to call them if you would have an investment idea in mind. In addition to that, they also supply super gift ideas in the form of coins. And by the way, I'd just like to point out that today I was told that they have the new 1989 Canadian Maple Leaf Inn. So those people who are collecting coins, the Canadian Maple Leaf, Silver Maple Leaf, is now available at Oxford Assaying and Refining. And in addition to that, you will want to know that they also have a large supply of nuggets on hand. If you have a someone special that you'd like to give a special gift to, you might want to drop down there, select a nugget that is appropriate, perhaps attach a loop to it, put a chain on it, and give it to that someone special. That's Oxford Assaying and Refining. Their phone number there is 456-3967. And they're located at 208 Wendell Street. Despite what I've said in the past, it is 208 Wendell Street. And once again, their phone number is 456-3967. And you also might like to know that they have a quote line. And that quote line is 452-7858. And by calling that number, you can get the daily quotes of gold, silver, and platinum. Once again, the quote line is 452-7858. And if you need other valuable information regarding investment or purchases of precious metals, the number is 456-3967. Wow, that's lots of numbers. And we got lots of callers, so let's see what's happening. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd like to answer your question.
You would?
Yeah.
Well, I forgot what the question was now. What was the question?
You gave us the phone number to find out who they were.
Well, what was the phone number?
All right. I don't know the phone number. I know your phone number. The place of business was Case Truck and Auto.
Well, we got that part right. Where are they located?
Bummer. I'm not sure. The lady was Kathy Gabriel.
Okay.
And she works there.
Oh, you called her?
Yeah.
Oh, good. And Gabe's Truck and Auto.
Gabe's Truck and Auto, yeah.
Okay. Do you have any idea what they do?
They fix cars and trucks.
Okay. Are you aware that Gabe's Truck and Auto fixes not only trucks and autos, but motorhomes or big trucks as well?
Sure.
Well, we're going to have to... let's see here. Let me give you a few of the ideas. There are some of the services that they offer, okay? Okay, thank you. One of the things that I always like to mention about Gabe's is that they originated the IM, the no pass, no pay policy on the IM inspection. And that means simply that if your vehicle doesn't pass the IM inspection,
you don't pay.
Yeah. And they've got a couple of tow trucks around there that are available 24 hours a day. So if you run into a little roadside trouble, you can give them a quick call. And their number, once again, in case you forgot the number, it's 456-6156. And that might be wise to write that down.
Okay,
it might happen again that you have an opportunity to win a big prize on Alaska Gold Trails.
Uh-huh.
Have you listened to Alaska Gold Trails much before?
A little.
And let me say one more thing about Gabe's. They're located at 2058 Donald Road. And once again, their phone number is 456-6156. Probably the best directions is to their location is they're just off Van Horn Road near Metro Field. A lot of people are aware of that. So, what is your name?
Kurt Kadelka.
Kurt?
Kadelka.
Okay, how do you spell your last name?
K-O-U.
K-L-U.
D-E-L.
D-E-L.
K-A.
Okay, tell you what you do. You drop up here to Washington Plaza, the KFAR studio, pick up your certificate. And we'll see that, then you can take that certificate over to Oxford Assaying and Refining, pick up your one troy ounce silver ingot. How's that?
All right, thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Today, ladies and gentlemen, my guest is Odin Strandberg. Odin, welcome to Alaska Gold Trails. Could you speak into your mic one more time? Now try it.
Yeah, I appreciate being here, Jim.
Well, Odin, we've talked quite a bit on the phone, had a couple of conversations before coming up to the studio in the past, and you're a mining engineer, is that correct?
That's correct, a consulting mining engineer.
Were you born in Alaska, Odin?
Yes, born in Anchorage in 1941.
You lived, what, most of your life in Anchorage? Young life in Anchorage?
Lived through the middle of high school years in Anchorage and then moved on up to Fairbanks and finished high school in the class of 59, Lathrop High School.
At Anchorage, what was Anchorage like? When has there been quite a lot of changes since the time you lived there during the period of your grammar school years, or not?
Oh, to say the least. Anchorage is a teeming metropolis. I can recall when G Street going through town was a gravel road, and it was really a lot of fun in the old days, but it's a nice town now, too.
Do you find there were some creeks running around there that the kids always used to go fishing in, if I recall correctly, and now alongside those creeks there's big towering buildings and not much room for fishing any longer. Have you seen that? I mean, do you see that change in the atmosphere down there a little bit into the changing from the more the town atmosphere into the city atmosphere?
Oh, definitely so, but I think that in Anchorage the town's tried to preserve some of the areas like the old golf course has been still preserved and still is the golf course to me. And Chester Creek has become a green belt area, and Ship Creek still stays about the same. So there's still a few things that are unchanged there.
You say you came up during your high school years to Fairbanks, and after leaving Anchorage at that time, how many people were in Anchorage? Do you have any idea, Odin, about how many people were in Anchorage during the time when you left?
I would. It's been a long time, but 25,000 to 30,000 is what I recall.
Okay, and what we're talking about a factor of 10 here, aren't we?
Yes, a tenfold increase at least.
Uh-huh. And when you came to Fairbanks, you left the town of 25,000 or 30,000. You came to Fairbanks. Was that kind of a shock to you to come to such a small town? Fairbanks had what? Maybe.
Fairbanks, as I remember, was in the neighborhood of 15,000 to 20,000 at that time.
That wasn't.
And, there wasn't a big change, and it was a little cooler in Fairbanks. We went from 15-degree weather in Anchorage to 50, 60 below in Big Delta when we moved up. But the next day, New Year's Day in 1960, turned quite warm. So Fairbanks welcomed us.
They welcomed you. It was 60 below when you came through Delta Junction.
That's right.
And in Fairbanks, it was, once again, it was...
It was quite cold in Fairbanks also when we got into town.
Uh-huh.
But it warmed up the following day on New Year's Day. The water started to drip off the melting snow on the eaves on that day.
You know, that's quite a remarkable variation in temperature all at one within a 24-hour period. Was that an exceptionally warm year, or do you remember it as an exceptionally warm year, or was it just an irregular day?
It was an irregular day, as I remember, because the next day or so, the temperature went right back down again.
Mm-hmm. What was the, now, during that period of time, the high school must have been just about new. Lathrop High School must have been just about a new school at that time.
It certainly didn't show many signs of wear, although they've maintained it very well. When I go back there to high school functions once in a while, it sure looks good now.
Yeah. What were the facilities there? Did you have the swimming pool connected to it at that time, or did you use the Mary Cy pool? Was that?
No, neither the school pool or the Mary Cy pool were in. Our major recreation there was the gymnasium.
Uh-huh. Mostly basketball, was it?
Basketball, volleyball, all the indoor sports.
And what was the major outdoor activities in Fairbanks area that attracted you? Were you into the skiing or dog racing or any of the other kinds of wintertime activities?
Well, not a great deal. There was certainly some ice skating along the way and maybe a little bit of skiing, and the dog races, of course, during the season.
Did they hold the dog races on the Chena River, or had they moved them out to Stoddard?
They were right on the Chena River at that time.
I remember when I was Let's see, what year was that? Can you recall exactly?
This was when I came in to Fairbanks. It was 1957.
In 57.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed when I was here just a little earlier than that, that they ran the dogs. They had a 20-mile run on the Chena River as well. In fact, I think all the races were held on the river. And earlier, I believe about 1951, they used to have car races on the ice as well. And then finally, following the, as soon as the car racing became very popular, they moved it out to two different circular tracks that they built. One was located next to the Rendezvous Club, if I recall correctly. And that became a big time summertime sport then, was car racing at the tracks. And I don't know if they continued it on the river or not, but I remember that the ice carnivals were running on the river. Were the ice carnivals running in 1957 when you came?
Yes, they were. We didn't get to a lot of the activities, but I know they were going on.
What brought you up to Fairbanks from Anchorage?
Well, my father was wrapping up his mining engineering degree at the University of Alaska, and he moved our family up in mid-year 1957. He finished his degree work up. In the summer periods, we spent the time out in a Kuskokwim mining camp, and then as he finished up and moved back to the Anchorage area, I continued and started school in the mining engineering curriculum at the University of Alaska in 1959.
Oh, I see. Just during statehood time.
Yes.
And you then got your Bachelor of Science degree in mining engineering at the University of Alaska?
Yes. Finished up there in 1963 with a Bachelor of Science degree.
Are there any names that are still around, floating around, that you might have gone to school with, like the teachers, or are they still associated with the university or still around Fairbanks?
Well, there's quite a few people. Some of the prominent ones, I know that Earl Beislein was dean of the College of Earth Sciences and Mineral Industries then, and Donald Cook, who is presently head of the College of Earth Science at the university now, was my department head at that time.
Oh, I see. I remember when I came, Don was the department head when I first came back in early 1970s, and now he's dean of the School of Mineral Engineering there.
Yes, they're great men. I see them every once in a while, and they continue to have many words of wisdom anytime I see them.
Yeah. I don't know. Earl retired, I guess, about 6 years ago. And I don't know. He's been pretty active in the mining community ever since. I see him at a lot of the meetings and carrying on. A couple of other, he's got some awards through the Boy Scouts and so forth. I've read in the paper. He's been pretty active throughout his life here in Alaska. Tell us a little bit, Odin, tell us a little bit about your father and what he's done in Alaska.
Well, Dad was born in Flat in 1915, which was a town of over 1,000 people at that time. And he mined in Flat as he grew up, and then the family interest spread out, and he and his brothers and sister became involved in a company called Strandberg Mines, Inc., and operated a number of placer properties in the Kuskokwim district and one up near Utopia Creek. And they continued that activity until the early 60s, when the $35 gold price pretty well brought an end to that work.
Mm-hmm. Well, your dad then must have been well acquainted with the Miskovich family.
Yes. They all, as I understand it, practically grew up together out in that part of the country.
Right. They had quite a history out there, I guess.
Yes.
Are you familiar with any of the activity that went on in the Iditarod gold rush and at all?
A limited amount of knowledge there, Jim. I think my father is the one that really can tell the stories about that at some time with you. I know that it was a real gold camp, and there's apparently quite a bit of activity out there now, so there's some companies that are starting to take a look at the source of the placer gold, which was the original production target out in the Iditarod.
I was talking to Johnny Miskovich here over the past year on a couple of conversations we had, and he's uncovering the disseminated ore minerals in a lode deposit that they suggest might be the source of some of the gold in the area. And it is a decomposed stone that he's simply he's washing it like it's a placer deposit, but it's simply decomposed bedrock, and he's washing it right through the sluice and collecting the valuables from it. It was interesting to see him just how he did mine that particular type of lode deposit. I don't know, perhaps you heard him give a paper surrounding that Golden Horn mine out there at Flat. I think he gave it at the recent placer mining conference here. I don't know if you had the opportunity to hear that or not.
Jim, I didn't hear the paper, but I have stood on the ground at the Golden Horn with John and recognize it as being a portion of a probable major hard rock gold deposit, which Alaska is going to be hearing a lot about in the next few years.
You see, over the years, Odin, have you seen a lot of the hard rock gold properties, the potential of them being developed today? I know there's been a couple come online. I was just wondering if you see a number of others that have high potential for going into production here in the near future.
Well, here in our own backyard, tremendous potential on Esther Dome and at Cleary Summit. The surface has just been scratched by the Silverado Group on Esther Dome. We're going to be hearing a lot more in that operation, I'm sure. I've seen that from surface and underground, and as the vein systems get developed there, there's going to be a good production unit brought on stream there. And I should say continue on stream, as there's already a 250-ton per day mill. And at the in the Cleary end of things, the word seems to be that there's some real significant gold finds being made in several lode deposits out in that area.
The Vetter property was one of the most shocking, I think, I don't know if you'd call it shocking. It was of high interest, I would say. Piqued the interest when Rudy Vetter, of course, has been on the program. He showed some of the vein gold that he had extracted. And, of course, the gold is just peppered through the quartz, and some of that ran up to some of the samples ran up to around $6,000 a ton. Of course, they were, you know, it was pretty limited, the amount of that material that was available, but it was impressive to look down at a stone that was roughly the size of a softball and see it just peppered through with gold particles. And he had some impressive ore that he had sliced up and made available, especially to my students at the university. And that, of course, is on Cleary Summit.
Yes, and that's one of the significant properties on Cleary Summit that I was referring to.
Mm-hmm.
It could well be part of a production effort in the near future, from what I can tell.
Mm-hmm. When your dad, getting back to your father, he was born in Flat, and he got his degree here at the University of Alaska, and has he worked then strictly in Alaska with his mining background?
Generally, yes. I know that he's currently active in the mining field and is doing consulting jobs as they come along. The last major one that he did was to drill out a major reserve in the Kuskokwim district for a lower 48 client. And it appears that project, after a misstart, is going to get underway again this summer.
Explain that to me. First of all, explain to us, when you say you drilled out a property for a client in the lower 48, what does drill out mean?
In this case, it was a placer target on a stream called Bear Creek, and a churn drill was flown out to the project, which, by the way, we were talking about Earl Beislein a minute ago. It was his churn drill that was rented for the job, and the a 50 or 60 drill holes were poked into the ground on lines, And then a reserve estimate was prepared, and the amount of gold discovered in the drilling was sufficient to warrant a medium-sized mining operation to go ahead, a placer mining operation.
We don't want to get into the details too much, but when you say medium size, are we talking 100-yard-an-hour plant or something of that nature?
In the neighborhood of 100 to 200 yards an hour.
I see. And would you, something under 100 yard, would that be considered a small placer mining operation?
I would, in the classification I use, yes.
Mm-hmm. And over 200, probably a large operation. Would it be considered large?
Yes.
That's standard just about across the board, isn't it, Odin?
That's what I would say, and then yeah. People use different classifications.
Mm-hmm. Property that your dad worked on, to kind of give an idea of the atmosphere there, when somebody says a medium-sized operation, there was suitable reserves for a medium-sized operation to commence there, would that mean that they had 5 years of reserves blocked out?
Now, this particular property has in the neighborhood of 7 to 10 years of blocked out reserves, and then beyond that, if further drilling goes the way we think it will, there's probably a 20-year project.
I see. And based on 100 yards an hour, then this will make a good living for how many people would run that plant?
The operation would probably be peaking at about 12 people total on the project.
12 people.
Year in and year out.
Mm-hmm. And out in that area, what would you call the length of the season?
120 to 130 days.
Okay, so we're looking at 4 months.
You can generally run between about the middle of May and the middle of October in that area. And when I say the 120-day season, that would be the actual sluicing season. There's a number of weeks of prep work and at the front end to get going.
Odin, I want to get back to you in just a little bit regarding some more of the characteristics about placer mining, but first I want to talk a little bit about some of the people who sponsor our program here. One of the people who sponsor our program is B&L Pawn Shop, and they're located, of course, at 605 Gaffney. That's the corner of Cushman and Gaffney. And everybody knows that they make dynamite deals down there at B&L Pawn Shop. And, of course, most everybody has heard of Killer. And they know that if you tell Killer that you heard about their ad on Alaska Gold Trails from Jim Madonna, that she'll sweeten any deal that you can make with her. And you should also know that they take consignment goods, and if they don't sell it, you don't pay any commission. They loan, they buy, they sell, they trade, and they deal, and they've got all kinds of things down there. It's kind of like a huge variety of store. They've got cameras, stereos, gold, TV, videos, jewelry, tools, guitars, guns, car stereos, just everything you might want. And in addition to that, if you need a grub steak and you're in a hurry for a little cash, they can work a deal out with you. So stop down there at B&L Pawn. They're located once again at 605 Gaffney. That's a corner of Cushman and Gaffney. Their phone number is 452-3063. That's 452-3063. And you tell Killer down there that you heard about their ad on Alaska Gold Trails from Jim Madonna, and she's going to sweeten that deal for you. I'd like to take a minute to let all my friends here in the interior of Alaska know about the Days Inn Motel in Anchorage, Alaska. Whether you're traveling for business or pleasure, at the Days Inn Anchorage, you can expect personal service, quality accommodations, and affordable rates. Some of the conveniences that you will expect to find at the Days Inn include an airport limousine, airport courtesy telephone, a 24-hour restaurant, free local calls, and get this, an exercise facility, and of course, a lounge. Now, Days Inn is located, centrally located, at 321 East 5th Avenue. That's 5th and Cordova in Anchorage, Alaska. For reservations, you need but to call their toll-free number at 1-800-325-2525. Once again, their toll-free number is 1-800-325-2525. And tell them you heard about them from Jim on Alaska Gold Trails right here on KFAR Radio.
Here's is another good reason to shop at Fred Meyer today. What have you got? What have you got?
Fred Meyer has everyday low prices on the things you use and need this spring. Plus the time and money-saving convenience of one-stop shopping. So make Freddy's your springtime one-stop shop.
Smart shoppers know we're the value store.
You'll find extra value at Fred Meyer every day. Terrific sales just when you need them. Unadvertised specials. The best prices on your favorite brand names. And fast, friendly service that'll make your trip worthwhile. When you're looking for the best value for your money, remember, you'll find it at Freddy's.
One-stop shopping, that's our style. More choice and great buys down every aisle.
Our one-stop shopping, fast service, and great selection save you time. Our low prices save you money. Spring is here. You'll find it at Freddy's.
You know there's always another good reason to shop at Fred Meyer today.
Hey, I'd like to take a minute to tell you that we're here with Odin Strandberg. If you've got any questions about placer mining that you'd like to know, give us a call. We'll try to answer them, especially if you want to know things like how to go out prospecting for placer deposits, how to evaluate a placer deposit, and a little bit about what kind of equipment is used in placer mining. And, of course, the bottom line is, how do we get rich and famous? I said that to somebody the other day. They said, forget the famous, just show us how to get rich. We'll be happy with that part of it. So we're here with Odin Strandberg. If you want to give us a call, the number is 479-TALK. That's 479-8255. Odin, we're talking about little, medium, and big-size operations here. And most of the operations that we're talking about are operations that use probably earth-moving equipment like caps and loaders and drag lines and backhoes to load into a processing plant. Is that correct?
Yes.
You said using the model perhaps of Bear Creek or any model that you might choose, kind of could you run down how a style of an operation might begin during the initial stages when somebody suspects a stream has a valuable gold deposit in it, right through the development stage and into the mining of the property, how a person might set up the mining equipment based on what he sees in the stream. Now, I realize that's a large chunk.
I might digress just a moment. There's another type of placer, a buried placer, or an underground placer, that has quite a bit of potential in the Fairbanks area. And that type of operation, when you use smaller machinery, and might entail shaft sinking and drift work, and drilling and blasting the frozen placer material. But that's a digression, and then on to what you were talking about, Jim. One of the first things to undertake when looking at a drainage and suspecting values or having values is to look at the USGS and Bureau of Mines, other records that there might be, a public record, to see what people have done on the drainage before. And then after going through that material and somewhat substantiating what you suspect, it may be that some field reconnaissance and some pan sampling and so on could be in order.
Once it's established from pan sampling and surface examination that there's enough, what is that, the prudent man rule, says that the person doing the investigation or interested in the property will put up time and money to open up a mine. I think that's the criteria for staking a claim. Is that correct? Something to that nature?
Yes.
And once he's established that there is a significant amount of gold there to entice him or her to put additional energy in there, what would the next step be?
It would be some type of a rational prospecting of the ground that would block out gold reserves or metal reserves. And that could take the form of test pitting, hand or by machine, drilling, or actual bulk mining on a somewhat small scale. And those are only a few ways of checking the ground.
Now, most of the time you have, of course, bulk mining of the material is perhaps just as accurate a way as any to evaluate a piece of property. But most times in the past, we've been using churn drills. You spoke of churn drills, and to describe them just briefly, a churn drill is the same kind of drill that many people have seen, old water well drilling type systems that seem to pound their way down through the gravels or through the soil, and then following the bit pounding its way down a few feet, they will use a baler to bale the broken rock out of the hole, and then through that method they would drill down to bedrock. Do you find that most people in Alaska today are using this churn drilling method of evaluating the ground as opposed to bulk sampling, or is it the other way around?
Well, churn drilling is, as a lot of people will tell you, is an old-time method of evaluating ground that's still very valid now. Churn drilling itself is a rather slow but accurate process. And there's several projects going on in Alaska this summer that are using the churn drilling technique. Bulk testing is sometimes necessary where the churn drill hole itself will not give an adequate sample to give an accurate evaluation of the ground. And it might be dug out in a bulk test at a rate of, say, 5 to 10 yards an hour to get a recovery of the metals and evaluate the ground. Because churn drilling is slow and labor factors being as they are, a number of operators have gone over to a reverse circulation rotary type drilling that's been used quite a bit at the major gold deposit at Valdez Creek in deep, rocky ground, so that the evaluation of ground has a lot to do with the ground itself as to the type of equipment that's selected to drill it or to test it. Some ground in the Placer District up around Wiseman and east over into the Chandler District has gold that's coarse enough that normal drilling techniques will give indications of value, but actual shaft sinking is really needed to get the bulk material out to test it. Or in lieu of shaft sinking, some type of large diameter rotary drilling in the 18-inch and up diameter range.
Once the property is evaluated or drilled and we find that there's suitable gold there for mining, you're going to have to make a decision based on the characteristics of the ground. I assume that probably the depth of ground is going to play a role in the kind of machinery you select, the type of gravel, whether it's flat or round, and the size of the boulders would probably also play a role, wouldn't it, Odin?
Yes, it certainly does. The digging section, be it stripping material or the material to be mined, will govern the machinery selection, as will the overall size of the deposit. And there's any spectrum of sizes that would, a machinery and type of machinery that would come in. It's difficult to make an overall generalization, but a lot of times you can say generally that one thing or the other becomes critical in bringing a deposit into production. In one of the Kuskokwim deposits that I'm familiar with, for example, the removal of 25 to 30 feet of frozen muck is a large expense item, whereas the actual processing of the 5 to 8 feet of pay section is the easy part of the job.
Mm-hmm. The you know, in the Fairbanks area, I've heard a lot of, actually I read a couple articles, and I've heard some of the people who have mined in this area say that the major gold was within the last 5 or 10 foot above bedrock, and also trapped within the first foot or so of the fractures within bedrock. And we're talking now about maybe 50 to 100 foot of muck overlying 50 to 100 foot of gravels, and all the gold, the real gold values, are down there within the last 5 feet. So a person has to kind of select the equipment that can deal with that depth. Chances are when you you gave us that introduction about drift mining, that perhaps the drift mining method in many cases was the best way to approach that.
Any way you cut it, when you get in this business, you're forced to become a materials handling expert.
That's true. Odin, you got a call here. Hi, you're on the air. Hello?
Oh, yeah. I don't want to be on the air.
You don't want to be on the air? Oh, darn, we're going to miss you.
No, I want to talk to Bill. Is he there?
Well, hon, I'm sorry. I think he's not in the room right now. Sorry. Okay. We were down there at 200 feet below the surface. Anyway, yeah, you're a materials handler. There's some I just heard about this recently, but in Canada they're starting to drift mine using some sophisticated equipment and sophisticated techniques, spiral drifts that spiral around, and using rubber-tired equipment to go down to the bedrock-gravel interface and bring the gravel up again. Odin, let's try this once again. Hi, you're on the air.
I know. I want to give Bill my phone number. It's changed.
Okay, I'll tell you what.
I don't want to do it on the air.
You don't want to do it on the air.
Here. Right on.
Well, okay, let me see if I can do something here.
Do something.
Hello? Give me your phone number. You're not on the air. I'm on the air, but you're not on the air. Okay, love. Bye-bye. Odin, where were we?
So we're talking about some of the underground drift mining and some of the mechanical methods that are being introduced.
I just heard that the Canadian people were introducing some new style or new approaches in drift mining. I had recently worked with a fellow out near Tenderfoot who put in a drift mine, and he used all the old-fashioned methods, with the exception of on the surface he had some of the more, you know, he used more modern machinery. But underground it was all steam thawing, and I remember when I went down the shaft, as soon as I got down to the floor of the drift, and I looked back in there, there was this little light probably 50 feet away, and there was these two guys mucking the face out. And it looked like I had just walked back in history by about 80 years when I looked back down in there, because it was just as I had visualized it when the 98ers were working in the Klondike, you know, and some of the Hague pictures that were presented during that period of time. And it was a remarkable sight, kind of a thrilling experience for me. At any rate, those are the kind of things that when these old-timers drop these shafts to bedrock, perhaps 30, 40 feet, and in the Fairbanks area up to 200 feet, if I'm not mistaken. Isn't that correct, Odin?
Yes.
200 mm-hmm. feet? And then they would drift out laterally looking for that pay streak. Well, the objective then during this drilling and this bulk sampling operation, of course, is to define what we call that pay streak. Isn't that right?
That's right.
I was talking to Ernie Wolf the other day. He was probably one of your teachers, too, wasn't he?
No, he. I don't think I had him for a teacher, but he is a friend.
Yeah. He said one comment. He just lit up like a light bulb. He says, Jim, when you're on the pay, you really know it. When you're on the pay, you're drilling across a channel and you're on the pay, boy, you're really happy.
Yeah, even happier when you're digging it and running it through your processing
right,
plant.
That's right. We're going to try this one again. Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, I got to turn my radio down. I agree with everything he's saying. I totally agree with him. I know the Hammond. I know all the gold mining.
You do?
But I wish someone would speak up for the gold miner's wife that washes clothes on a washboard, cooks for 9 men, carries water. Somebody should stand up for the wife once in a while. But see, when her husband follows that gold streak, you follow him if you love him. And I think some women are due a little credit for that cook shack.
Odin,
so let's hear about that from these gold miners out there.
Are you a member of Alaska Women in Mining?
You better believe I am.
You are?
I see on the... I don't like to be in the limelight, but I wish they'd say something about the women that cook and order the equipment.
And
send you to town with a grocery order by the case and be back and fly the plane out before the haul road. Yeah, tell me about it.
You do all those things?
Yes, I've done it. I don't do it anymore.
Odin, do you have any comment that you'd like to make about all the work that the women do in these mining operations?
We're on the sidelines. See, we clean up the concentrates and send them up to the university to see if we're picking up antimony. Antimony's deadly. We don't throw that away. That's a war material. We don't like it.
But
we don't let anybody stockpile that.
You don't?
No.
No, but you keep the gold.
Like
you keep the gold.
Well, of course.
Well, of course. And where do you take that?
Well, that's my business.
Oh, okay.
None of yours.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'll never ask that question again.
Why don't some of these gold miners say something about their wives?
Well, if you want, I'll say something about my wife.
Well, say it. I'd like to hear it on the radio. You guys all talk about what you do. Why don't you tell what your wives do when they're gold mining? Without a washing machine, automatic, up there on the creek, hauling water?
Well, I have my wife just beat my clothes out with a rock.
Well, that's about what I did for 9 years. Well, it's not really funny. And your fingernails break.
Well, it is funny. It is funny because all my shirts had holes in them.
All right. You know what all wives do of gold miners?
What's that?
You go down to Co-op Drug and you buy a can of that green stuff, bag balm, and you rub it on your hands so they don't bleed when you're scrubbing clothes for those men while they're making their dumb gold.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to get a miner's wife on the show here.
Got a miner's wife here.
Okay, you want to come on the show?
Anybody that knows me knows my voice.
They do.
I'm going to shut you off, and I want to hear some comment on this.
Okay, kid.
And repercussions.
Shut me off.
All right, you're off.
Bye-bye.
She shut me off, Odin.
What do you think of that? Let me do this. I got to do this. I'm going to talk about this guy a little bit. I like to talk about people. I'm going to talk about Robbie Ginther. And a lot of people know who Robbie is. He's the general manager of Tip Top Chevrolet Buick. It's located in 1916 South Cushman. And, of course, their phone number is 452-8211. And Robbie is one of the fine sponsors of Alaska Gold Trails. And a lot of times I kid around a little bit about one of Robbie's ads that he has on television, and he says something like that. He says, "You've never driven anything like the 1989 full-size Chevy pickup available right now at Tip Top Chevrolet. It's the hardest working pickup with the longest regular cab in Chevrolet history, and it's got a new chassis system, a new aerodynamic shape with a new rear wheel anti-lock brake system, an Insta-Track shift on the fly on the four-wheel drive. The 1989 full-size Chevy pickup. It's new, it's exciting, and it's here in Fairbanks at Tip Top Chevrolet, your Chevy Team Alaska dealer. Drop on over and take a look. And don't forget, buckle up with Tip Top Chevrolet." Well, that's the way he does it. And I'm not sure that the words are exactly right, but that's Tip Top Chevrolet, and once again, they're located at 1916 South Cushman Street. Their phone number is 452-8211. And I wanted to let Odin know that we're running a little low on time here, Odin. We've brought our gold mining activity up to evaluating the property, and of course, once the property is evaluated, you have to select the proper type of equipment. Is that correct? And when you were talking about, just quickly here, when we're talking about equipment for these mining operations, in a small operation, if a guy's going to go out and buy good used equipment, what kind of money could he expect to spend in one of these kind of operations, on a small operation, to initiate his plant?
Good cat for $35,000 and a sluicing arrangement $50,000 to $100,000, and if you put everything together, the tractor and the sluice plant and pump and so on, for a small operation, you could probably get in business for in the neighborhood of $250,000.
Odin, thank you for joining me here on Alaska Gold Trails today.
It was a pleasure being here, Jim. Thank you.
Listening to KFAR Radio 660 on your radio dial in Fairbanks, Alaska.
From ABC News, I'm Doug Limerick. New developments in connection with the accident on board the battleship Iowa. Let's get details. ABC's Herbert Kaplow.
Naval investigators have completed their probe into the explosion aboard the battleship Iowa, but according to Pentagon sources, have been unable to pinpoint the cause. 47 men died in a gun turret while the ship was sailing north of Puerto Rico about 6 weeks ago. Sources also say the investigators have ruled out any murder for insurance plot by surviving crew member Kendall Truitt. A report's to be distributed to senior Pentagon officials within the next few days. Herbert Kaplow, ABC News, Washington.
So that would appear to vindicate Kendall Truitt, who has staunchly denied any involvement in the accident. More news after this.
Out here, when I'm doing 200 in my...